I'm Zeke Binion.
And I'm Matt Rich.
I'm a product designer and founder of CodeForDesigners.com.
I'm a front-end developer at TableXi, a UX design and software development company located in Chicago.
And this is ProductShip FM, a show about what it takes to design and build products that people love to use.
In this episode, Zeke and I are talking about feedback. Feedback in sort of a general sense, how it works, how it feels, how it impacts, you know, you as a person growing as a human, and then also how it impacts the projects that you work on. We'll talk specifically about what feedback looks like in sort of the design aspect of a project, and then also what it looks like in the development side of a project. I think this is a really interesting conversation. I'm excited for you all to listen to it. Enjoy.
So Oprah, in this clip, she's talking to Stephen Colbert about a time period early in her career where she, you know, would hear feedback, you know, whether it was through newspapers or sort of other journalists, that was effectively like,
she ate the furniture, she ate the questions, she ate the that. So I actually listened to that.
Much to her credit and probably her success, she listened.
Mm-hmm.
So she talked about receiving that kind of feedback as being a thing she, in her career, has practiced. So she did exactly the same thing when she heard the feedback from Trump.
So when I heard that the president had tweeted that, I went back and I looked at the tape to see, you know, what is he actually talking about? Was I biased? Were we not fair? And I didn't get it. But I did examine it.
She evaluated it seriously.
Yeah.
I called up the 60 Minutes producers. I said, hey, is there any validity to this at all?
Came to a reasonable conclusion, which is...
And we all looked at it and said no.
Yeah.
No, she wasn't leading anybody. In fact, she could have if she wanted, but she certainly didn't.
Unsurprisingly,
right?
That was the conclusion. Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, it gets me thinking about feedback in general and, you know, that process of growth for people. And a lot of it is... You know, in some cases, listening to people give you feedback that they may be actually wrong, or listening to feedback and, you know, this is something that's going to help you grow. So I think it's really cool that we could sit down and actually just talk about feedback.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting story. Like, I think it pinpoints that feeling that if you've never had really like good feedback that has translated into you just being a better person and doing better work. Maybe you don't know what that feels like, but you know, Oprah, given her past, has obviously that like Zeke was saying, that happened to her earlier in her career. So now she's very, very cognizant when any feedback is given to her, like, okay, like I should take this seriously. I need to evaluate this because it could make my career just that much better. And that's pretty amazing. So I, you know, it's hard to get to that place, I think.
Yeah.
You know, receiving feedback is as difficult almost as probably giving it, you know, depending on the personality type. You know, it's not an easy thing to give, not an easy thing to receive.
No. I've gotten a lot of feedback over the course of my career. And I can tell you internally, I don't know that I learned how to take it well until probably the last 2 years. I've been working, you know, for over a decade. And I'm still not perfect. I still have moments where in the middle of receiving the feedback, I'm sort of, you know, either questioning my own strength as a designer, or I'm questioning the person who's giving me the feedback, but you know, not really kind of focused on what I should be focused on there, which is, you know, this is a piece of feedback. Let me look at it and examine it and figure out which pieces of it I can take away and grow from.
Right. And this does sort of connect to the last episode that we did related to trust in your teams. When you have good communication, good trust within your team, the feedback that you give and receive ends up not, you know, your brain doesn't go into that kind of combative defense mechanism space.
Yeah.
And you're able to actually receive it with sort of an open mind because you know that person is only has your best interest in mind. They're not trying to, you know, they're not trying to do something bad or mean or anything. They genuinely want you to be just to be a better at what you do and you know, all that kind of stuff. So they have your best interest in mind. And once you can get that dynamic working, then it makes giving and receiving feedback a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's maybe talk, let's pop out a little bit and talk about sort of what good feedback means. Because I think this is going to be an underpinning to sort of the rest of what we're going to talk about today. So can you give us a summary of what good feedback is, Zeke?
The quick high level is good feedback kind of has three components. One of those components is that it's actionable, meaning the piece of feedback you're being given isn't so broad in that it's hard to discern what the thing is I can take away from this. It's something that I can very much look at and go, all right, I understand what is the next step I can take. And often that's on the person giving feedback to suggest, hey, here's an action you can take to kind of correct this feedback. It's timely, meaning, you know, you're not waiting days, hours, and sometimes or even minutes to give the feedback. You're giving it to that person, you know, as close to the time that they committed the thing that needs feedback. And, you know, that doesn't mean stop everything you're doing. Like, if someone's in the middle of a speech,
Zeke. Yeah, I need to give you this bit of feedback.
Yeah.
But that one is tricky because of the uncomfortableness of giving feedback for most people, you kind of just, you put it off just, you know, because it's not that fun to do. And then when you get too far away, then it's not as useful when it's too far away from the thing you want to give feedback on, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I remember there was, you know, back when I was working with TableXI, the then director of operations and another director and I were all in the same interview process. And, you know, it happened to be one of those days, which happens, you know, in a busy work life, where none of us had lunch before we made it to this interview that was scheduled to happen sort of right after lunch. And so the two other people brought their lunch in with them and kind of ate during the interview process, which is something we do sometimes at meetings. We have a TableXI has a big culture around just coming together, eating, and using that as a space to share ideas. But a piece of feedback I gave them literally a minute after we walked out of the room was eating also, while a candidate speaking also has this weird power dynamic to it. And actually, there's a ton of cultures that find it offensive for you to eat while you're talking to them. We don't know that before we get in this room, so we should never, especially being three men interviewing a woman, be the people who are sitting there eating while you're talking.
Yeah.
Now, if I would have waited 6 months to give that feedback,
could happen five more times, but you know,
yeah, or they simply would have gone, I don't even remember that,
right?
And in both cases, that falls flat. And so, I was happy because you know, the director looked at me and was like, no, you're absolutely right, this is exactly the right time to give us this feedback.
Nice, yeah, so that's how it's supposed to work, right there,
exactly. Which also jumps us into that last sort of big point in giving good feedback. It's also got to be specific. Even in that example I showed, I talked to them about the specific cultural implications. I talked to them about the power dynamics presented in that situation, and they knew exactly what they had done.
Yep.
And none of that was hidden.
Yeah, and it doesn't, you know, if you just said, I just don't really like it when people eat around me. Okay.
All right.
That's not going to land.
No.
You know.
And it shouldn't.
No. Yeah. But actually tying it to, you know, specific thing and reasons why and that kind of stuff. I'm sure that was very well received in that way.
I'll be honest. You know, one person looked and said, yep, right time. Another person looked and said, all right, I understand and I need to work on this, but it's not something I culturally get. That's okay too. I think a lot of people can feel like when they give feedback, the person they're staring across from who is receiving that feedback has to receive it well. And the truth is, people are complicated. I think some people are going to look you in the face and go, thank you for this feedback. You know, most people are going to either be uncomfortable with the feedback you get, they're given at the time, or they're even going to react a little negatively and begin to sort of question the feedback.
Yeah, and I think it's okay to not, even as someone receiving it, if you sort of have that feeling like, I don't, you know, the example of like, you know, I don't get why this is a thing that I should worry about, or I just, you know, you sort of have like the, I don't know if this is actionable, I don't know if this is valid feedback. If the seed is planted, it might not become obvious to you immediately, but maybe in a month or something, you kind of, I don't know, you have some time to kind of mull it over, and it stews around in your head a little bit, and you're like, oh, I get it. You know, it might click at a later time. So even as someone receiving it, it's okay. Take it in and, you know, just be conscious of it. You know, have that in the back of your mind while you're doing the same thing that you were getting feedback on, you know, and perhaps it will actually click for you at some point. Maybe it won't, and that's okay.
Yeah, you're saying that reminds me of the new car effect. If you've ever had that experience where you bought a car, you thought no one else was really driving it, and then all of a sudden you go from never seeing it to every other car is that car.
Yeah.
There's something that just happens with our perception and awareness when we start getting in tune with these things that, yeah, you're right. Sometimes you just got to take it back and let it stir around in your head, and it'll come out better on the other side.
Yeah, for sure. We should talk about what does it feel like to give and get feedback? And we've kind of been dancing around this a little bit, but maybe let's dig into this specific point a little bit more.
Yeah.
Zeke, you probably have being a designer, you know, design feedback is a thing that happens a lot. So you probably have quite a bit of experience both getting and giving feedback. Can you maybe get us going on this topic?
Yeah. I think as a designer, you know, the unique piece of thing that happens, at least in the product space, is everyone has an opinion on your work. Rightfully so. Everyone can see your work. It's highly visible throughout the entire project if you're pursuing design in sort of this open design space. You've got developers who have experienced working on projects before who can see your design. You've got project managers, you've got product owners, stakeholders, and the user. Right? You've got everybody capable of giving you feedback, and that includes other designers as well. I went to school for graphic design, but my school was an art school. It's Columbia College in Chicago. And you get this interesting dynamic when you come out of that school. In a lot of ways, you can begin to view your work as precious, as this thing that you created out of nothing, more like an artistic experience than a design experience. And slowly over time, that school, I think, does a good job when you get into the design program itself of transforming it from art to design, which are very distinct. Mm-hmm. Art being like this thing that's designed to be provocative and...
Right, self-expression kind of thing, right?
Yeah. It's the way you give feedback for that is completely different than what you do for design. Design's got to solve a problem. That's what we're here for.
Right. It has to be a lot more easy and specific to give design feedback than art feedback is. It's just a different thing altogether.
Yeah. And for the person receiving it, it feels personal. It feels very personal. And as designers, because design, I think, is kind of a marriage of art and science, it can often feel still like you're an artist, at least especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
And so it can be very difficult to receive feedback. You can start to wonder, okay, well, what does this person know? Yeah, they've been in design for 10 years. Why are they giving me feedback? I've been here for 6 months, but I'm great. and so you can get into those spaces, and, you know, stepping away from it, we all can recognize it's ridiculous, but in the moment it doesn't feel that.
Yeah.
So it can, to some degree, feel like people are attacking your work when you're getting feedback. And then when you're giving feedback, you know, if you're a person who, you know, hasn't dealt with a lot of conflict or really doesn't enjoy being in conflict, which most people don't, giving feedback can kind of feel like pulling a tooth. Like you know the feedback you want to give is going to be helpful, but like to some degree, can I avoid giving it? Can we do something else? Maybe someone else will tell them, they'll figure it out. And there could be real hesitation to give the feedback because genuinely you don't want to hurt someone's feelings as a good human being. It can be very difficult. It's certainly not the most enjoyable or pleasant experience in the world.
Yeah, I 100% agree. How did you break yourself out of the kind of like feeling personal about both giving and receiving feedback? You know, we're talking about more in the design space. How did you as a designer evolve to not feel that? Or do you just kind of always feel that and have, do you just tamp that side down a little bit? Like, I'm just curious. I know we have some ideas for, specific strategies for doing this in sort of like a team structure, but I'm just curious, like on a personal level, like how did you just all of a sudden kind of realize that you didn't need to take it that way? Or, how did that happen?
Matt, I'm superhuman. No.
Mr. Feedback.
Yeah, just feedback all over the place.
He gives and receives feedback better than any other. Yeah. The comic book right there.
Exactly. Just give me some tights. The process of evolving was interesting. I think for me, I came out of school with this recognition that if I wanted to be very good, I needed other people to give me feedback. So I actually sought out feedback, which is a kind of a weird thing to have to do.
Is that an ego thing, do you think? Like, do you need to sort of kind of set your ego aside?
Yeah.
And just open up and be like, I think I'm really good at this, but let me just put that aside for now and let's see what other people
actually think
and let me open my mind to it.
Absolutely. I think for me, it was very easy to go, no, I have no ego, because I was breaking into design is super difficult. I think now it's probably a little easier. Actually, it's probably a lot easier. Saying that, recognizing that there's still a lot of people trying to break into UX and all of that, it's still easier than it was when I got in. For me, I was able to remove a lot of that ego because I just kind of felt like I needed to become good enough to actually make it into the field in the first place. And I couldn't let my ego stop me from doing that.
I mean, I think that's not a super common way of approaching it, but I think it's a very good approach. So, I mean,
yeah,
it obviously worked for you. And I think that's probably like just a lesson for any younger designers or newer designers that are looking to get into the field to do that. I mean,
yeah,
like we said, you get a lot of feedback. Some of it might be great. Some of it might not be, but
yeah. And what's ironic is I spent a lot of time learning how to give feedback by volunteering and mentoring. I mentored a lot of designers. I think my count is probably up to like 40 to 50 at this point. And, I've done that as part of like reaching out to boot camps and mentoring there.
Right.
I've also volunteered as a mentor local nonprofits. I've had other designers in the field reach out to me as well. And what you find out there is most of your job as a mentor is to listen and then to give feedback.
Right. That's the dynamic of the mentor-mentee relationship.
Yeah.
Is basically that. So that's a good tip, I guess, if you want to work on giving feedback. In those mentor-mentee relationships are a really fantastic place to do that.
And, honestly, that's also a good place to learn to receive feedback. It seems weird as a mentor to suggest that you're also going to be getting a lot of feedback. But I frequently, in the span of a few months, we'll just stop and take one of our mentoring sessions and go, all right, I want to hear from you. How is this serving you? What are things I could be doing better for you? Things like that. And it also serves as a mechanism to kind of humble myself and think about, am I serving this person well? Am I helping them well?
For sure. And again, Zeke, I will say that I don't think that is a super common mentality for those relationships, but I think it is a great one. So I would encourage everyone else to keep, I mean, it again, it's just, it's kind of put your ego aside, be humble, realize that you may have 10 more years of experience than the person you're talking to, but they still have some insight and can still make you better at what you do too. So you have to put the ego aside, be humble, and be open to that stuff. Just no matter where you are in your career, you never are done with that stuff. No. You're never immune to that.
No, and I think to some degree, if you recognize that it's going to suck before you start doing it, you're going to remember all those things that you're going to feel, be ready for those feelings to happen, then it makes it much easier to walk into that process. There's this a psychological thing you can do to get people do called exposure therapy to get you used to like things that you might have as phobias. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to slowly progress to the point where you can kind of stay in the same room with it. And I think to some degree, you know, that first step is not necessarily being in the room, but it's thinking about what that experience will be like. And for me, that's kind of helped a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So that kind of brings up a thought in my mind about design feedback specifically in how, like, what are, let's talk about some specific ways in which design feedback can happen. Mm. I know we have one that Zeke and I have both used and participated in the past, and it's a design critique method developed by, I think, the Google Ventures team. Is that right?
Yeah. So this is what I always find interesting about the way Google writes. They're sort of like, people who are really in tune with design and have figured out that a lot of the methodologies for design, even though somehow we all learn it in school and through books, no one really talks about it out in the public. So that's when that was in part to couch my reaction to Google Ventures design critique being developed by them. I actually think that might have been just a generalized design thinking method from IDEO.
Totally possible. Totally possible. Where I read about it from was
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we talked, let's get those thoughts together. It's too many. It was on my board. You know, is my, one of my words, vocal tics I look for. If I say, you know, it means I'm formulating a series of thoughts that I need to delay.
Nice.
As a designer, feedback happens constantly, especially if you're doing design right. I know there's a lot of different types of design, and it's hard to say any one way is doing it right. But I can tell you, listening to people, whether you take their advice or not, is the right way to do design. Mm-hmm. And so those people could be potential end users, and there's all kinds of stuff about user research and usability studies and practices and techniques that we're not going to get into because that's not really the core focus here. But that could also mean getting feedback from clients and stakeholders. It could mean getting feedback from team members, all around this idea of the work product.
Right.
And so as a designer, the thing that's really difficult for us is you have to get people to separate out design into at least three layers and maybe potentially four. But there, for any design, at least on the web or, you know, native mobile products, there's a difference between the structure and flow of the design. You might easily visualize as like wireframes and those sort of wireframey like prototypes compared to the visual and aesthetic of the design. And then the wordsmithing, wordplay, and that kind of content, they all combine to form a great design, but any one of those could be right without the other necessarily being right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes, if you're a designer, if you're on these, you know, sorts of teams where there are distinct people taking care of each piece of it, you could walk into a meeting with a client and go, hey, you know, here's the design, take a look at it. And they want to comment on content, but that's not really something you're privy to, and it's not even the purpose of this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Or the same could be with a usability practice, and you're giving them wireframes, and you know, some people actually don't understand how to look at and read wireframes. I remember there was at least one Fortune 100 level organization I've worked with where their head of design really couldn't receive wireframes well. He just didn't really understand what he was looking at.
Sure.
And it all creates these sorts of problems. And if you add that with questioning the expertise of someone who's providing feedback in a certain area, which can happen to the designers, they can be readily be dismissive of, hey, a developer's giving me that feedback. Well, what does a developer know? Well, probably a lot. They've been working in this medium for a long time too.
Mm-hmm.
Or what does this particular client know? Well, you know, they're probably successful for a reason. They've been in business for a while, unless you're working with a startup who's in ground, like zero level of us being a startup. And so that can make things complicated. I think the style that Google Ventures created for critiques, I think works really, really well for internal team members. It can be really difficult for clients.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. because you're putting guardrails around it. I love this process, but you're really putting guardrails around people. So I'll talk a little.
Yeah, I don't even know if we have to dig into the specifics of it. I think that the general concept of it is that it helps make the feedback good feedback by the structure of of the critique. So, you know, again, that actionable, timely, specific sort of feedback, that's what's useful for a designer to actually work with. And you want that feedback as a designer. So this is just it's a very useful mechanism for getting that specific feedback. And kind of, I mean, to be fair, you kind of box people in.
Yeah, you do.
I know I've been, you know, part of teams that had a designer that really wanted feedback on what they were working on. And we just like would sit down in an office and start talking about it. And it's just those conversations go off the rails so quickly that almost nothing useful comes out of it. We end up talking about something super specific that's not even that useful or relevant to the design work. And it's not useful for the designer. And we just end up spinning and we sit in a room for 3 hours and we came out of it and we're like, wow, we just like, what did we get out of that? Nothing. So this just varies. The structure is very specifically, we're going to talk about this thing. Here are the rules. Here's the task I want you to test. You know, please give your, you know, call out the things you like, call out the things you don't like, try to think about, you know, why. You don't have to. I will compile all of this afterwards and then figure out what, you know, and then do something with it.
Yeah.
It's just, that's the general gist of it. But you don't end up in these like 3 hour marathon meetings where you kind of walk out of there just tired and like we solved nothing.
Yeah. And I think the important takeaway that you can kind of generalize into the process of asking for good design feedback is all the feedback you're looking for needs to tie up into a high level goal. And in the Ventures critique format, what you're doing is sitting down as a designer and going, here are the things I was working on and here are the goals for that piece. Is it working?
Yep.
And it gets everybody to go, okay, this is what we're here for. I could see a bunch of other stuff that might be in progress and I'm going to give you feedback on it, but I don't know that that's in progress. I don't know that that's what you're looking for. And it really kind of recontextualizes things, and you can even do that piece with clients.
Right. And it laser focuses where the feedback is, which then in turn will just makes it more useful. And so I think a higher point here too, is that these things, you know, you want to get this feedback pretty regularly. You don't want to wait till you've designed the entire application or whatever you're working on and then do this.
Yeah.
You want to kind of do these short cycles. I mean, at TableXI, maybe like an hour long meeting on a specific thing is enough to kind of keep the process going, and doing that regularly. I've seen that work just super well. And Zeke, you've been on the receiving end of some of that stuff. And have you liked it?
Yeah, I think what's really nice about the process is it empowers developers, project managers, the various parts of your team to give you feedback in a way that's quick, short, succinct, to the point, and really addresses the problems. Because as we sort of mature as senior level designers, designers end up knowing how to give each other feedback. That's not really a problem because that's, you know, part of our practice.
Right.
But a designer doesn't know everything about the product or the project. If you have a project manager or a product owner, they spent a lot of time, you know, working directly with the client. They might have heard some things that, you know, when they're in that meeting, they suddenly remember, oh yeah, that's right. This is relevant to our client in this way. Let's address that. And the same might happen for a developer. They've probably had some separate meetings with the client as well because they're dealing with very specific technical issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they can look at it and go, well, I remember hearing this in this meeting, or I remember this problem we're addressing. Let me add that piece of knowledge to this feedback. Now you can run with it as a designer, along with their, you know, sort of more, everyone's more generalized expertise and just seeing how a web or mobile or desktop project might work, other design practices they might have seen.
Right. It brings everybody into the design process, which, as you've heard us say a million times already, is just a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Design and open. That's sort of my philosophy.
Yeah. Let's maybe make a right turn and talk about sort of the other facet of building things and more of feedback and critique on the development side of things.
Yeah, this is, I've got questions for you, Matt.
So let me just kind of air out what we're talking about here. So I think when we think about feedback in the life cycle of a product and building a product, you think more about the design side of things and feedback on that. But once we get into the cycle of actually building the thing, there is a lot of feedback and critique that happens inside a development group. A lot of development teams use this process called pull request review.
Ooh.
And this is a here we go. How this works is that we use systems called version control systems, and probably a majority of folks are familiar with GitHub. And GitHub is a code repository that allows sort of a centralized place to manage your version control system. So what would happen is I would pull off a piece of work and kind of branch off of our main, software master, like the shared software that we're all working on, kind of pull a copy of it and do my thing. And then when I'm done, I submit what's called a pull request. Mm-hmm. And what that is it basically makes a comparison from the software, you know, the master branch, which is, you know, the thing that we're all sharing, to what I just did. And you see sort of a line-by-line comparison, the changes I made, the additions I made, the subtractions I made, all that stuff. And GitHub specifically provides this mechanism for review on this. So I can add comments to specific lines. I can make a generalized comment on the thing. I can request changes, all sorts of different tools that are part of the GitHub ecosystem.
Yeah.
So there are some, I think, good ways, bad ways to work and to provide feedback in that mechanism. And I think Zeke and I have both probably given and received in both good and bad ways in that process. Do you have any thoughts on pull request review process, Zeke?
To me, what's great about that PR process is this is like the ultimate in specificity. You can literally click on a line, the exact line, and leave a piece of feedback right on that line. So to me, the big keys to that is being very specific, not just leaving a note on that specific line, which is great, but being very specific into what is the problem and detailing it out. And to some degree, I think also asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
This goes broader into that subject of PR reviews, but I think a lot of times it's very easy to just tell someone, hey, do this, right? And if you're not on the same project, you have no clue why they might have deviated from your standard practice, if this thing is an error, or if this is sort of an intentional decision. And I think just because we don't have that human sort of connection of like talking in person and figuring things out, I think you've got to be extra careful in making sure that you understand the context behind the code, not just a problem you're seeing.
Right. And actually, as you're talking about this, I think there are a lot of similarities between what we were just talking about with providing design critique in this context too. So the notion or the idea of a pull request is very specific. So we've sort of isolated the code that we want feedback on to this specific chunk of code.
Yeah.
But then also when it comes to providing the feedback, you're right. We don't, you don't want us to say this is wrong. You know, like something like that. Don't do that. Well, okay. You don't know. You don't.
Yeah. Just pretty much never.
Yeah. You don't, there might be some underlying issue here of the reason why we did this, that type of thing. So if something, you know, I mean, we want to go back to providing the good feedback. You know, you want it to be, you want something actionable here. I mean, it's going to be specific in nature because of the mechanism of pull request review, but you want it to be actionable and you want to give some context into maybe what you're thinking too. So, no. You know, it might take a little more time to provide feedback that way rather than just like flagging a line and saying, nope.
Yeah. But you know what? What's interesting is when you talk about that amount of time it takes, it does take more time, but initially I think it actually saves more time in the long run.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Because someone might respond to it and think they understand what you were talking about and then make a change and you go, oh, no, that's still not what I meant.
Yeah. yeah. And then like they take that on to the next project. They take that on further into the code base. I think that's the ideal for feedback, right? Like it corrects a short-term problem and turns that short-term problem into like almost a lifetime of, you know, just good practices.
For sure. And as developers, I mean, nobody knows everything. There's just, you know, we all have little nuggets that are hidden in our brain that we've picked up over the years and from various projects and various things that other, that our team members might not have. Yeah. So if you figure out, you know, hey, look at this cool, there's this other way to do this that will, you know, be more efficient or, you know, read a little bit better. And then you can show that to someone like, oh, that's great. Yeah. Awesome. I'm going to do that. And then they take that. Then now they have that nugget. So, you know, like you're really, it's a very interesting, and feedback in general is, you know, you're learning how to be better at what you're doing. So I think that same mindset applies to this process too, you know,
yeah.
And you need to be open when you submit a pull request that other people are going to have different ideas, different opinions, and you can have discussions about, you know, someone might not agree with the way that you approach something, but
yeah,
you know, perhaps you can explain to them why you did and it ends up being the best way to do it. And maybe it's not, you know, like there's room for that sort of back and forth, which is a little different probably than more of like a traditional feedback cycle.
Yeah.
And that I can kind of challenge your feedback to some degree.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit interesting, you know.
Most interesting example I can think of that we probably both shared was I remember looking at one of our team members' front end code. Thinking to myself, oh man, this idea of utility classes, and this is a very specific example. We don't really do this, and I'm not sure that I'd like it. And then, you know, she talked a bit about the problems she was trying to solve with it, which were real problems. Like, you know, basically we end up repeating code in a lot of places for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, yeah, no, we should probably explore this more.
For sure. I think that raises a really good point about, I think developers have a bit of an issue with getting super, super dogmatic about very specific things and how to do things and the right way to write stuff and weird syntactical decisions. And,
yeah,
you know, I like spaces here. And I mean, that stuff can be important. And there are tools to sort of help us normalize all that now, so we don't have to worry about it. But there's a balance there between, like, that example is a good one, and that I think we probably both looked at the code and went like, oh, I don't think I would write it like this. But instead of jumping to in and being like, nope, don't do that, this is bad, you have to dig in a little bit deeper and say, okay, what, you know, what's going on here, let's talk about it. And then once you hear like, okay, this is trying to solve this specific problem on this specific project, like, oh, interesting. Yeah. I think that's a good, that's a good strategy. It makes sense. Let's, you know, let's go for that. So I think it's real easy for developers to get caught up on sort of the little piddly crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes you got to be like, I maybe wouldn't have done it that way. I see why you did it. I think it works. Not everybody needs to do everything exactly the way that I would do it.
Yeah.
That's fine. Move along. You know, that's not useful feedback. Like, there are 17 ways to do this. I would have done it this way. You did it that way. I think my way is better. Do it my way. That's not good feedback.
There's one exception to that rule. There's exceptions to everything. But the only exception I could find in my mind for that time where it's, yeah, you kind of actually do have to be dogmatic, is when, let's say you're bringing in a contractor temporarily to work on a project that's already been stood up for a long time. The contractor really doesn't know your practices at all. And if they're only going to be there for like a month, yeah, okay. Teach them how to do it exactly the way you would do it.
Sure. There are some of those things for sure. Just yeah. Like,
there's not a lot of them though.
No, there really isn't. And you can, I feel like when you're looking at that code, you can pick out the stuff that is more like, will be a problem. Like, it's just a very, this is a very different way of thinking about this thing than we do here. So you should probably do it this other way.
Yeah.
Versus just little random, small, piddly stuff that honestly doesn't matter that much, you know, like there's a balance there. There's a balance there.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like the difference between, strategic thinking in code and I guess almost like kind of like a lack of thought or force or foresight, right? Like if you're doing something different with a strategy and a reason behind it, 9 times out of 10 people are going to be like, yeah, I like this idea. I like where you're at.
Yep.
If you're just being sloppy, it's probably not going to work out.
Right. Right. Oh, one other point that I kind of forgot about here, but I wanted to bring up. We've tried to do things to sort of loop designers a little bit more into the pull request process, which is a little interesting. At least on the GitHub system, you can include screenshots and videos and animated GIFs and things like that.
Yeah.
So a lot of times what we'll do is at least when we're working on more of a UI focused piece of work.
Yeah.
We'll drop some screenshots or whatever kind of helps illustrate how this thing works and what it looks like and a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then tell our designer on the team to, you know, pay attention to the pull request coming through, give them a look. And if it includes like images and things like that, they don't necessarily need to read the code. They don't care about that.
Yeah.
But if they see the image and they're like, oh, that is way off, then they can kind of chime in. And I think that's pretty awesome. And I love seeing it when a designer, you know, adds a comment in there, it always like, it surprises me in kind of delight in sort of a delightful way. Like, oh yeah, you're paying attention. This is awesome. cool. It's great. Cause then we can catch those issues before they get further and inevitably need to be dealt with anyway. So that's just a little tip about, you know, include imagery, include those sort of things when you're doing UI stuff and include your designer that, you know, sort of watching over that stuff on the project.
Yeah. GitHub, except you can just drag and drop GIFs in. I think I found one of the tools that I really like the most for capturing those GIFs, ironically, is just Giphy. It's got a cool desktop app that you can kind of resize and edit the clip.
Yeah, there are several. Yeah, and GIFs are really fantastic because they're kind of small, little, you can record, you know, a little 5-10 second snippet about what you're doing and show some interactions and stuff like that. It's cool. Yeah. So yeah, that is kind of the development feedback. I mean, there's GitHub is just the place where we all are sharing our code. So it ends up being, this pull request process ends up being really a very logical place for that feedback to happen inside of a development team. But it happens elsewhere too. It happens, you know, in pairing sessions and things like that.
Yeah.
Of course too.
So to wrap this episode up, feedback is one of those critical things you need for growth. It's not going to feel great all the time. But as you get used to it, you know, you'll get better at both receiving it and giving it. Remember, good feedback is timely. It's specific. It's actionable. It's got to have those three components or else it's going to be very difficult for the person who's receiving it to one, understand what you're talking about, but two, do the thing you want from feedback, which is to grow. You could apply any of these principles anywhere throughout your process, whether you're a designer or developer, and even argue a project manager or stakeholder. There are plenty of opportunities to get feedback within your teams, whether it's in Slack or GitHub, or doing a more formalized process like a Google Ventures design critique. Feedback is absolutely critical for growth.
It's critical for successful projects too. I mean, you're going to grow as a designer, as a developer, as a whatever, but it also just leads to better end products. Thanks for listening to another episode of Product Ship, the show about what it takes to build and design products that people love to use.
I'm Zeke. You can find me on Twitter at ebinion, E-B-I-N-I-O-N.
And I'm Matt. You can find me on Twitter at M-G-R-E-I-C-H.
To listen to all of our episodes, go to productship.fm. And then please leave us a review if you'd like on your favorite podcast app. See you later.